Thank you, and good morning. I want to take you on a journey this morning through some of the stories that have shaped who I am today in hopes to help you embrace the choices that will lay ahead in life for you. And I want to start by telling you a little bit about where I ended up today, and I know you've heard a few of these already. And then I'll take you back to the beginning. I never thought that I'd ever be named as one of Canada's top 100 most powerful women. I never thought that I would be recognized with an outstanding alumni award from Mount Royal University. I never thought that I would become one of only 60 master certified coaches in Canada and one of only 4% of coaches worldwide. I've written almost 40 articles for Forbes Online, and I've contributed to almost 100 others. I've built a successful leadership and development business, impacting thousands of leaders over the last decade. And I graduated from Mount Royal University at 31. Now, some of my most important accomplishments are very personal. I've become the proud mom to an 11-year-old daughter. I've been married for 17 years, and I've lived in my home that I live in today for those last 17 years. I bought my first home at 21. It was a modest, small apartment for just me. And I managed to graduate high school at 18. And at the very beginning of this story, 30 years ago, I was 15, and some really hard stuff happened to me at that time. And before I take you to that story, I want you to think about yourself at 15. Where were you living? Who were your best friends at school? What kinds of things did you worry about? What was happening in your family? What were some of the big things that happened for you that year? When I was 15, I was in grade 10. I was in Western Canada High School, downtown Calgary. I was a French immersion and IB student. I had A grades. It was the first week back to school after Christmas. That first week into January. And I suddenly found myself living two blocks away from my high school in a shelter for homeless youth. That's where I was when I was 15. I had to now figure out not how to do well in school, but just how to get to school. I suddenly found myself living with people that I had heard about, but I didn't know their stories. And I suddenly felt like I didn't want anyone to know mine. I became that kid that I thought nobody wanted to bring home, that nobody wanted to spend time with. And if I was invited, I thought I'd have to figure out, do I tell a truth or do I tell a lie so that I could be accepted? But then I also took myself to the story that they won't want to invite me anyways. I was too young for government support, and I was too old to become a ward of the government. I had nowhere else to go for 4 months until I turned 16. I dropped French immersion. I dropped IB studies. My focus, again, was just getting to school. And then as soon as my 16th birthday came, although I became eligible for some government support, I also had to immediately move out of the shelter. And that became 2 years of unstable housing included living with a dysfunctional family, room and board, that I had never met before. Turned into some couch surfing and living in lots of toxic environments over those 2 years. And during that semester, there was a moment that truly stood out for me. And that was, I was taking a course in an elective. You had to take non-academic electives. Every student had to. And I signed up the semester before, not knowing where my situation was going to take me. And I decided to take automotives. Why not? Everybody should learn how to fix a vehicle, or at least be literate in automotives and understand that part of my life and how to take care of that important asset in my life. So I took automotives, and I remember one day midterm exams came, and there was a rule in the class. It was an hour and a half long. You had to stay for the first hour of the hour and a half of writing the test so that you weren't leaving in dribs and drabs and interrupting everyone that was writing their test. And I finished my test early. I went and I handed in my test, and I went back to my seat, and I reached underneath my seat, pulled out a book, and started reading. It was 30 years ago. I still remember the book. It was a Ray Bradbury book, The Stories of Ray Bradbury. And then when we were able to leave the class after that first hour, the teacher, Mr. Rainsforth, he tapped me on the shoulder and he said, "Hold back for just a minute." And I thought I was in trouble. He says, "You're the very first student to ever voluntarily pull out a book and read in my class. Keep doing that." Here was a teacher who truly saw me. He didn't know exactly what I was going through, but he did know that things were really hard. And it was a validating moment that has stuck with me for 30 years. He did it at a time that I didn't believe in myself, but he believed in me. As a result, I took automotives through all 3 years of high school so that I could continue to be in his class. And once I turned 16, at the end of April, I realized that I needed a job and I needed somewhere to be for the summer. I applied to the military, and I applied to become a vehicle technician. That's their language for a mechanic, because of this high school teacher. And that would mean working Wednesday nights and weekends. Thought, I can do that. And they put you through a whole bunch of IQ tests when you apply to the military. And I remember a recruiter in my final meeting with him saying, "Are you sure you want to become a vehicle technician? Your tests, they indicate you could do anything. We'd be happy to take you into anything. Are you sure you don't want to change your mind?" And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know what I was capable of. It was a time that I didn't believe in myself, and I went with the one thing that I knew, and I said, "Yep, that's what I want to do." What were you doing that summer that you were 16? I went to basic training in Saskatchewan. And it was hard. It was really hard. And while I had stable housing that summer, I had a job. I didn't anticipate how hard it was really going to be. And before I ended up in the shelter, at 15, I started going to the Y. And when I ended up in the shelter, it was really lonely. And I wanted to keep going to the Y, but I couldn't afford to. I had no money. I had none at all for those first 4 months in the shelter. And I had heard from someone that the YMCA has a program where they don't want anyone from the community to be turned away. And the way to move forward and to explore that was to make an appointment with the general manager. And so I did. I was really scared to go and talk to him, because here was someone in leadership in an organization. I'd never gotten to talk to someone who was a general manager for me, who was the president of the company, and so I thought. And he had a candid conversation with me, and he said, "I believe in providing dignity for everyone, and that means that everybody has a means to pay and contribute something. What would that mean for you?" what could be your contribution? And so we made an agreement. I could afford to pay $10 a month, and the other thing I felt I could contribute was to volunteer to an organization that would be giving so generously to me. And as a result, I got involved in their youth leadership program, but I also volunteered for youth nights to help organize them, to help plan some games, and I also started volunteering with kids' birthday parties with 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old kids. And I loved it. And the YMCA became part of my core community, and so did the military and my colleagues in the reserves. From 15 to 18, my friends at school changed dramatically. My friends changed from the kids that were the best, the brightest, the ones that applied themselves and focused on doing really well in school, to the kids that were struggling too for a variety of reasons. As I neared the end of my grade 12 year, I started looking around at my friends and thinking about my future. And I looked around at them and I thought, this isn't who I want to be. And so when I graduated high school, I made the difficult decision to leave them all behind. And I did manage to graduate high school with the bare minimum, with the 100 credits that I needed to walk the stage. I didn't do well, I didn't have good grades, I didn't have options to go into post-secondary. So I decided to go upgrade my math and my English and to give myself some options for the future. And in addition to my part-time reserves role, I knew that I would have to find some employment for the fall while I did this upgrading. And I landed an really esoteric job. I ended up working in a bagel factory, not at the front counter selling bagels, but in the back making bagels. And then at 19, I was in a serious car accident. I was on my way home from work at the bagel factory one day, and I was hit by a driver in my driver door. And I had a serious injury. I had nerve damage in my right arm, and I couldn't work. I lost my job, and after a period of time on modified duties in the military, I realized that I would have 2 years of recovery ahead of me with no guarantee that I would ever be able to do that kind of work again in the future. And so I received an honorable discharge from the military, and I also had to stop volunteering at the Y. And so at that time, I lost a lot of my community I worked so hard to build. It became a really lonely time for me. With no other support, I had to go and find some other work. And I went to an office placement agency, and they sent me to a lot of different companies, and one of them was an interior design company. It was with one of Calgary's best interior designers, Douglas Cridland. I didn't know that, had no idea who he was. And so I went to the job interview and I came back with a job offer. Within a couple of years, I went from being a homeless youth to spending time in homes of some of the wealthiest families in Canada. One of the best learnings that I took from the time that I worked with Doug was that we're all the same. People are people. It doesn't matter what someone's title is. It doesn't matter whether you're CEO or you're homeless youth. We all worry about the same things. Our context just becomes a little different. I learned from him and from those clients that we all crave connection. We all need community. I remember one client, sometimes she would just call to say hi, or she would drop by our office just to have coffee, and her name was Els. And she would call, and I'd answer the phone, Douglas Cridland, Interior Design, and she'd say, "Hi, Virginia, how are you?" And I'd say, "Els, it's Jen, I'm good, how are you?" And every time she would call, the same thing would happen. Until one day, she called, and again, she said, "Hi, Virginia, how are you?" And I said, "Els, it's Jen, how are you?" And she says, I'm so sorry, Jen. I keep calling you Virginia because you sound just like her. And she's my best friend. And she passed away a couple years ago. The next time she called me Virginia. And I said, "Hi, Els, how are you?" At a certain point, I realized that how we treat people and when we look at who they are as a person, that's where we create the greatest connection. And how that lesson with Els has served me today is an example from last year, a CEO that hired me to work with him as his coach. He interviewed a number of different exceptional coaches, and when he chose to work with me, I asked him, "Why me?" to understand what it was that I could bring to serve him best. And he said, "You're the only one that asked about me and my family and how we're dealing with all the change that we're going through. People are people. We all need connection." And I got settled in working with Doug for a year. And I realized that there's only so long that I could run errands and wait in people's homes for plumbers and electricians. And I was given the gift of stability that year in having good employment, having a good income, having stable housing, that I started thinking about what I wanted for my future. And I wanted to attend university in psychology. I decided to apply to university, and I remember the day I got the envelope with my acceptance, and I was so excited. It was something that I never thought I could do when I graduated high school. I got a 50% in math, but when I upgraded, I got an 85. When I graduated high school, I got a 55 in English, and when I upgraded, I got an 80. And that hard work meant an acceptance to university. And suddenly I felt valuable and I felt like somebody. And so I quit my job because it was full time. There wasn't an option for part time. And I got a basic part time job and I started university. And it, again, was hard work. And I didn't have a lot of support. In fact, no support. I didn't do well in university my first year and I didn't get into my faculty. I was in general studies. And you had to have a certain GPA to get into your faculty at the time. And I sought out to talk to the general studies faculty to get some advice. And they said, "I can't give you advice because you want to go into psychology and we can't help you with your path." So I went to psychology. And they said, "Well, we can't help you because you're not one of our students." And so here I was, caught in a gap. And then after my second semester in university, I realized my grades weren't improving. I was working too much. I was working 20 to 30 hours a week just to pay my bills. And then I was also racking up student loan debt. And I was worried about how I would survive under crippling debt and come out of university, likely with a degree that couldn't get me a job. And so I made the tough decision to leave university and to go and work for a while and figure out what I was going to do next or how I would return to university and be more successful. Now, I haven't told you that when I was younger, before I ended up in the shelter, I had a really isolated family situation. I was really lonely, and I wasn't able to get out and spend time with friends. And so the way that I created community for myself at that time was before the internet was a thing, there were these bulletin board systems. You would use your dial-up modem, and you would call into these different bulletin board systems for games and also chat rooms. And so I would talk with people and I would make friends by typing to them. This afforded me some great skills. Those skills helped me get the job with the interior designer because I could type. But after I left university, I stopped by to see a friend from that old community. I met him after work at the internet company he worked for. And I was talking to him about the struggle I was having and that I needed to find a job. And he says, "Oh, well, you've got some great leadership skills." He knew I had been volunteering at the time as a volunteer coordinator for an animal rescue shelter. And he knew about my skills around computers. And he says, "I know the general manager for A&B Sound, and I know they're looking for a computer department manager. You'd be great at that. Why don't I make a connection for you?" And so he did. And again, I got the job. Now, A&B Sound was a electronics and music store downtown Calgary in an old building across the street from the bay on the corner of 8th Avenue and 1st Street Southwest. And I didn't know it at the time, but this was the start of my technology career. Over a short period of time, I became the best salesperson for A&B Sound across the country, and my team also became the best sales team across the country. And my mantra was this: I don't sell, I just help people. And we were lucky because of our location, we were downtown Calgary. A lot of the things we were selling that came from the buyers in Vancouver, people didn't want what was on our shelves. And in an effort to help people, I started special ordering items. The next thing I knew, we had a huge special order business to business, selling computers to lots of energy companies downtown Calgary. And after a couple of years doing this work, I started thinking again about, where am I going? Am I going to go into leadership in a retail company? This isn't what I want to do, but I think I like this technology thing. And again, that led me to another opportunity. One of my clients connected me with an interview at Shaw Communications to answer the phones for their internet service for retail customers. And again, through somebody making that connection for me and opening the door, I got the job. And if you can imagine working in a call center, you get to see the best and worst of people. After spending hours on hold to finally get through to a technical support person, a lot of people were really angry. My gift was de-escalating those people, helping them feel heard and understood, and then turning the situation around and turning them from that irate customer into a supportive customer. The leaders for our department, they recognized this strength in me, and they wanted me to go into their customer care department. But I wanted to prove myself that I could do this technology thing. And so I pushed back, and I didn't want to go down what I felt they were pushing me into was a pink collar route. But they really weren't. They were trying to recognize my strengths. So they gave me a chance, and they moved me to their security team. And we'd get these cease and desist letters from music and film studios in the United States that required us to track down who that individual was that was illegal downloading with their IP address and find the path through the network to track them down. And we would send them a scary letter, and some of them would stop. Most wouldn't. And over the time I spent in that department, I got exposed more and more to the back-end network side of the business. I started taking courses and did a lot of self-study to start earning some certifications to give myself more choice in the future. And then I tried to move from that security team into one of the networking departments at Shaw, and I was unsuccessful a number of times. And one day, I went on my lunch hour to Eau Claire Market, standing in line at Subway, I ran into one of my former colleagues from the call center. He was over at AT&T Canada, and he said, "Oh, what are you doing right now?" And I had the opportunity to say, "Oh, you know, I'm working at Shaw and everything's great." But I chose to tell him the truth, and I said, "You know what, I'm feeling like I'm out of opportunities at Shaw. Unless I want to go back to the customer service route, I'm finding that I'm not able to get a path forward on the networking side of things, and I'd really like to do more of that." And he responded, "Really? You're awesome at what you do. We could use you on our team over at AT&T Canada." And a week later, I had a job offer to become a telecom designer for AT&T, and I took that opportunity. I could never have planned that. It was a chance opportunity. I could have taken the safe path and told him, again, "Everything's fine, I'm good, how are you?" But I chose to tell them the truth. It was a series of choices that I made over a number of years around all the challenges that I had in front of me that led me to this point. And over 10 years, from 1990 to the year 2000, I went from being a homeless youth to a mechanic in the military to a personal assistant to an interior designer to a false start at university, to now a high-tech career. Who could have planned that? And AT&T, they would give me those client networks that were a mess, because they knew that I could improve them and I could see what was possible and I could make them better. They also gave me, again, those irate clients, those crusty clients that nobody wanted to talk to, but I did. And those clients became my biggest fans. I worked on national and international computer infrastructure for banks, hotel chains, logistics companies, and more. I earned a ton of credibility as a result of doing that work on these large projects, and also the depth of relationships that I was able to create with my colleagues and my clients. It's also what got me into trouble. I ended up in a terrible bully situation. We had a reorganization one day because we were moving floors into a new operations center. And instead of having a team myself, my colleague and I, we became co-team leads of a blended team. Now, one person took issue with me being a woman, with my strong relationships with the sales team, with our clients externally and internally. And you might think that this person was a superior to me or even a peer, but in fact, it was one of our junior team members. He took issue with reporting to a woman. He started yelling at me in the workplace. He had a lot of power with our team. People were afraid, and so they wouldn't speak up. They didn't know how to speak up. I spoke up to senior leadership, and I'll tell you, they didn't know what to do. They tried. And I can tell you, even today, a lot of organizations don't know what to do. And at that time, they truly didn't. People didn't want to become targets. Senior leadership didn't know how to deal with the team. And in the end, it didn't turn out well for me. I gradually started getting depressed. I hated going to work. I come home in tears every day. And then in 2001, the Twin Towers fell in New York. And a few months later, I met my husband, who became an incredible support during this tough time. And then also the dot-com bust came in early 2002. I lost my job. I thankfully lost my job, and I wasn't thankful at the time. They downsized our entire team to Toronto. And I was thankful, I am thankful today, because I also was able to leave a toxic situation that wasn't going to get any better. I was able to start moving on with my life. And I became a consultant for the first time in my life. There were no jobs for someone like me, because with the dot-com bust, there was too much infrastructure. And the reputation I had was working on large-scale projects. Nobody was building anything. Nobody was redesigning anything, at least as an employee. And so through a lot of coffee meetings, I started to figure out how to become a consultant and work on short-term projects. It was a really hard time because there were periods of 5 and 9 months that I had no work. It was hard because I kept going from team to team to team when community was so important to me. But now I had support at home. At one point out of work for many months, I got called by a headhunter and another headhunter and another headhunter. In fact, I had 5 headhunters call me about the same job. They couldn't find anyone else in the city that had the unique set of skills that this employer was looking for. And I put my name forward. I wasn't successful. I didn't even get an interview, and I was confused. 5 recruiters are begging me to put my name forward, and I didn't get an interview. And a few months went by, and another recruiter came and asked me again to apply for the same job, because they couldn't find anyone. And I said, everybody's tried to put me forward already. I'm not doing it. And they begged me to. And so I said, I will on one request. And that is, if I'm not successful, you owe me feedback that no one else could give me on why I'm not successful. And so they agreed, and they put my name forward, and I did not get an interview. And they came back and said, it's hard for us to give you some feedback. They said, you owe it to me, you made a commitment. And they said this, you didn't hear it from me, but they told us not to send them any more women's resumes. They did me a favor. I don't want to work for someone like that. Had I ended up in that organization, I would have worked for someone that had a strong gender bias. We all have bias, but here's someone that had such a strong gender bias that I wouldn't want to work for someone like that. And after a few years of consulting, I started carving out a greater and greater reputation for myself. And the opportunities came easier and easier. And after a full year embedded with one team, they wanted to bring me back for another year. But I was feeling unfulfilled. I felt like I was missing something. And I thought maybe it was being an employee and being part of a team for a long term. Although I had been part of a team, I didn't go to their Christmas parties, I didn't go to some of the team events that they did. Maybe that's it. So I also had a competing offer, and it was an offer from Nexen to join their team as a full-time employee. And I took the job offer. I thought this would solve what I was missing in my life, and I became a lead architect for their projects in Colombia, the Gulf of Mexico, and in Yemen. Nexen was a new culture, and I absolutely loved my team. What was unique about this culture is they took a Yemeni student every year for a full year as an intern. And on our team, we were one of the teams that would get one of those students. And I remember one intern that he would carry all the equipment and hold the door. And imagine you've got this young guy, he's holding equipment this high out to here, and he's running ahead and he's struggling to open the door for me so that I could pass through. It was uncomfortable, and it wasn't working for me, and it started causing some conflict for us. I insisted on doing it myself at first, and then after a couple of months, I thought, I need to talk to him about this because I don't understand. And so I did, and we sat down, and I shared with him my discomfort and how I felt that I was taking advantage of him. And then I asked him what was driving this for him. And he shared with me that he felt like a bad person if he wasn't doing these things because of his culture, and that I was a woman and also his superior. And so we came up with a compromise. And that was, when we worked together, that he would carry the equipment, but that I would get the door and I would hold it for him so that there was the opportunity for both of us to do what felt good for us. And we made other compromises, because we continue to talk about it along the way. The more we talk to each other, the better we work together. Being a woman in a male-dominated field has great advantages and disadvantages. Some advantages for me were that I was one of the very few women that did the work that I did. I'd go on a course and I would be the only woman on the course. I met very few women that even did the work that I did. And as a result of standing out, my good work could stand out too and lead me to opportunities. Yet there were also a lot of disadvantages and downsides, like aggressive behavior and discrimination. If you think that you can hustle and that it won't be an issue for you, I'm here to tell you that it will, and it will be hard. I don't know how, but it will be an issue for you. And you'll need to figure it out. It will be challenging. Now, I reached a point at Nexen where I still felt unfulfilled. Here I was at a great company in a great role. I was looking at next steps to move into more senior leadership in my career, and I didn't want it. And I felt quite confused. I should be excited about this path, and why am I not? And I sat on a path of personal reflection to try and figure out what it was that I was missing, and not just making that next leap, that next jump. I really wanted to be intentional about where I was going and figure this out. And it took me about a year to figure it out. I realized that I liked all the things that were on the fringe of my role. I liked partnering with the business on strategic decisions. I liked growing and developing my team. I didn't love the core of the technology that was the basis of my role. And so that led me to, oh no, if not this, then what? And it meant a career change is what I realized. And so I set out on exploring different career opportunities, and I had a lot of coffee meetings, explored a wide range of different careers, a lot of careers in healthcare that led me to doing more high school upgrading, this time with the help of my husband, in a number of sciences to have all my options open. And as I explored healthcare careers, I realized that a lot of them wouldn't be a fit for me. And I started expanding my thinking and looking at, okay, I like some things in business. Let me go talk to other people in business and see what else could be an option for me. And then I got introduced to this idea of human resources. And we started talking in some of my coffee meetings about leadership and the journey of leadership, about company culture, about teams and team development. And I got excited. And so I made the decision to apply to human resources at Mount Royal University. And when I quit my job, some validating things happened with my team. The first one was, where are you going and can we join you? And then I told them I wasn't going anywhere to a new company, that I was going back to school full time. Their next reaction was, you're crazy. What are you going to take? And when I told them, they said, wow, you'll be so good at that. So I knew I was on the right path. The hardest part of becoming a student again, I didn't anticipate. I didn't anticipate that it would be so hard for me to become dependent on someone else for the first time in a very, very long time. And it challenged my identity as a young, strong, professional, and independent woman. I had to step back and look at what was different and not to push away that support. Here I had the amazing gift of support from my husband. It was no longer all up to me. I needed his support, and there it was in front of me. And I needed his help. He helped me with my homework. He helped me learn how to write great papers. And he was an invaluable emotional support for me during those years. And I chose Mount Royal University because I got to know myself as a learner through my technology career. I learned what I needed to succeed. I was self-motivated, self-directed. I knew how to learn in a self-directed way through self-paced high school upgrading, through self-study to earn technical designations. I knew I needed a certain environment to be successful. I knew I needed to talk out loud in a small classroom to further my ideas, to further my thinking. I knew I needed that interactive component. Although I could do self-paced work, I needed to engage in community with other learners. And I also chose a co-op stream so that I could be assured that I would have stable employment when I graduated. I was also acutely aware that I no longer had the easy brand of being one of the few women in a male-dominated industry. I entered a career where I was the majority, no longer the minority. And I also knew that I needed community. And so I joined the Human Resources Association of Calgary to get to meet other human resources professionals and help them get to know me to support my learning and also to have opportunity in the future when I graduated. I started volunteering on their committees and for their events, so that not only could they get to know me at an event, but they could see what I was like to work with. And despite graduating at 31 from Mount Royal with a 3.98 GPA, nobody cared. Finding my first job was very hard. Here I was, a new grad. I had way too much business experience for any of the new grad jobs. but I also had no HR experience. And so there were a lot of coffee meetings, a lot of coffee meetings. I networked into a role in a technology company in their human resources department. They gave me a chance because I deeply understood their business. They gave me a lot of credibility, and I could help their HR team with that, while I also learned and took on this role in human resources. I supported a business unit, was a third of the company that was off-site at a client site. And there was a lot of challenge in this organization. There was toxic hoarding of work between teams, leaders that were technical leaders that were never developed, that were promoted, and they were starting to micromanage their teams. And there was a lot of culture envy. That third of the company that was at that client site, they would look with envy at the head office that had all kinds of awesome perks. And also, it was branded as the place where your career went to die, where you would get forgotten about and you would languish and you would never grow and develop. And I worked closely with the leadership team. We turned things around within 2 years. And my role was starting to change from one that was focused on developing the culture and the teams and the leadership. It was going to turn into an HR generalist role, and that wasn't my passion. And I started looking at, okay, well, what else can I do? How can I carve myself out another role like that within this company, find another project? And I also started talking to people outside the company, and they started planting seeds and helping me understand that the work that I was really passionate about doing was from an external consultant role, but there were very few internal employee roles in doing that kind of work. And so, with a lot of research, I decided to undertake professional coach training and then to start my own consulting practice. And then all my good plans laid, my husband and I decided to start a family. And I decided that wasn't the best time to start something new, and so I delayed my plans, but only by 1 year. The opportunity's there. It'll still be there in a year or two or three from now. And so as I came back from my maternity leave in 2009, I started my business at 33. I wanted to stay engaged in my career, work part-time, until my daughter was in kindergarten. And so that's what I did. I set out looking for part-time roles or a few clients to stay engaged in my career. And yet, you won't be surprised that there was a lot of coffee in this exploration too, and a lot of conversations with a lot of mentors. And I received a lot of discouraging feedback in those coffee meetings. The feedback I received is, you're 33, you're really young. You're cute. You've not been in a senior executive role. That you're young. Most of your colleagues are male, senior executives that have retired, and they have a lot of gray. No one's going to take you seriously. They had a point. But if I had taken their feedback at face value, I would have been discouraged and given up. But I started looking at what was the grain of truth in their feedback. And they were trying to tell me that those male colleagues that had been in those senior executive roles, their credibility was visible. And in the feedback I received, they never said that I didn't have credibility. They said people wouldn't take me seriously. And so I thought about, how do I make my credibility more visible? How I did that is I started speaking at conferences. I started volunteering on strategic committees so that people I wanted to meet could get to see what I was like to work with and see the depth of my strategic thinking from my previous career, not just my HR career. And slowly, opportunities started to come. 2009 was also a terrible time to start a business. It was a recession. And in hindsight, it was also the very best time to start a business, because it gave me an incredible education in how to build a sustainable business, one that's not capitalizing on easy opportunity, but that I could create my own luck. I could create my own opportunities. And it was this foundation that set me up for long-term success in the work that I enjoy today. Through a lot of those coffee meetings, I ended up, after 4 months, feeling like a coffee socialite, But all of a sudden, one person I spoke to recommended I speak to Rick Harding. And then a couple days later, somebody else suggested I speak with Rick Harding. And Rick decided, I gotta meet this person. If two people I really trust are suggesting I meet with her, I'll have a coffee. And I left that meeting. We both left that meeting surprised. Here I ended up with an opportunity for a contract. He offered me 4 days a week, but I knew that if I took 4 days a week on this contract, that at the end of the contract, I'd just be starting over again. So I said, I'll do two and risk not getting the job. And he said, we'll take whatever you can give us. And so I worked for Rick in a career transition program, supporting and coaching leaders and senior professionals that had been out of work for a year or more. And I took the other 2 days a week that I wanted to work, and I worked really hard on developing the leadership practice I really wanted to have. Because of those efforts and doing that business development, I started getting engaged on LinkedIn and engaging in conversations and putting some of my thoughts and ideas out there. And I attracted the attention of the Women's Executive Network in 2010 because of that activity. They were looking for a great facilitator coach in Calgary to become a partner with them. And they said, from our research, you're one of the best. I'm thinking, I'm new, but you don't know that. So sure, why not? That gave me that edge of credibility that I desperately needed. And that same year, I had another opportunity. It was a marquee opportunity to work with a colleague under his company for a large energy company on a huge leadership development program. I was desperate to work in this role. I thought it would give me the foundation, another piece of credibility that I really needed, and some valid experience working with someone who was quite senior to me and very experienced. But there was something weird in the relationship right from the very beginning. He started asking me to do things that weren't my area of expertise. He was asking me to write case studies. I'm like, I don't know how to write case studies. No one's ever shown me how to do that. And he said, don't worry, I'll work with you. You'll be great. And it wasn't great. I agreed to take on this work, even though I pushed back. And then he didn't support me. He would criticize my work again and again and again. And I would push back and I would remind him it wasn't my area of strength. And he would continue to criticize me. And I started to lose confidence in myself. And one day, his criticism turned more personal. And he said, you don't know how to dress. You dress unprofessionally. Never in my life to this point had I ever been called unprofessional, and certainly never criticized for my dress. And I didn't think there was anything wrong, but I took his feedback on the chin, and I upped my game. And I changed how I dressed. And then this happened. A few months later, he came and he said, we need to talk about your dress again. Pardon? He said, you don't understand the context of our client. You dress too professional. He was passive aggressive. I owned far too much of the relationship for far too long. After talking to a number of mentors, I realized that I needed to hold my boundaries with this person. And so I told him, I don't dress for your clients. I dress for my day and my clients, and you are one of them. If that's not a fit for you, then maybe we need to part ways. And we did. And I'm glad that I did. Because in that relationship, it shook my confidence. But I left early. And he did this to other women, not just me. He did it to every woman on the project. Some of them lost credibility with the client in our industry. It shook their credibility. And some of those women, he also never paid. I got out early. I got out lucky. But I also shared the hard things I was going through with some mentors so they could help me make that tough decision. Now, by 2015, I had a strong and growing business. I had other associate coaches working with me. We were working with exciting executive leadership teams. We were having a great impact. The spring of 2015 was the busiest we had ever been. And I had received feedback from a number of people over the years that I should be writing a newsletter, and I decided this is the time that I would take that chance. And then a few months later, I was also looking at other ways to diversify our business, and I took the leap to create an e-course. I invested an incredible amount of time and money. It was a terrible failure. We didn't sell one. And then in the fall of 2015, with the energy industry collapse, we lost 70% of our business within 2 months, every single one of our energy and energy services clients. So the fall of 2015, well, from spring of 2015 to the fall, I went from being at the peak of our business to losing confidence in the summer to feeling like giving up in November. But that first year in 2009 in starting my business had taught me some valuable lessons. And it was to never stop doing business development, to never stop having conversations with potential clients and with mentors. And I continued to do that throughout that year. And by January 2016, just 2 months later, the phone started to ring, emails started to come. And between January and June 2016, we replaced all of those clients and we started to grow. And 2016 became our biggest year in business. And I'm so glad I didn't give up. And in 2017, I applied for the highest credential a coach can earn. I did it after only 7 years after receiving my first credential. And what's important about that is most coaches that apply do so after at least 10 to 15 years experience. The failure rate is more than 50%, so most coaches don't even bother applying. I decided to apply, and I sent in my application, and what was supposed to take 2 months to hear back took 5. And when the letter finally came in an email, PDF attachment, and I was sure I was going to open it to hear I was unsuccessful because 50% of people that apply are not successful. And I opened the letter and it said this: "Congratulations on your application. It has been reviewed and approved." Sorry? My application has been reviewed and approved. Does that mean I have to wait longer for you now to move forward? Are you just approving the application? And I scroll down to page 4 where it says, "Congratulations. We are pleased to award you the designation of Master Certified Coach." Boy, I wish they put that on the first page. That's how I became one of 4% of coaches worldwide and one of only 60 in Canada. I chose to put myself out there and to be vulnerable and to risk being rejected. But I knew that I had the 2,500 hours working with thousands of clients. I had the experience, I had everything that I needed, and I also used all the mentorship support possible to be successful. I also want to tell you about 2 other stories that I've engaged in on the fringes of my career that have led to my success today. And in 2015, when I was encouraged to write that newsletter, I was scared. I kept putting it off. I was scared that I'd put it out there and nobody would read it, or that I would lose credibility because people wouldn't agree with what I shared. And I decided to take the risk 5 years ago this month to write that first newsletter. And since then, I've written 60 articles and sent out 60 newsletters this month. Doing them provided me the experience to gain the attention of the Forbes Coaches Council. They saw my work shared on social media and they reached out to me for a conversation. It was the leap into vulnerability that I took that set me up for that future invitation I couldn't have expected. And in 2017, I started writing for Forbes. And since then, I've published over 40 articles with Forbes and more than 80 others that I've co-contributed to. Do feelings of imposter syndrome ever show up for me? Every time I write an article and submit it to Forbes. Not every article is a roaring success. Some have only been read by a couple hundred people, but others have been read by 10 and 15,000. If I don't put myself out there, that doesn't happen. I also want to go back to some of the things I did on the fringes of my career when I came into human resources. And that was that time when I joined the Human Resources Association of Calgary when I was a student to give myself opportunity in my career by meeting other peers. But by volunteering on committees, I started looking at what else I could do to contribute and how else I could engage in my own professional development. And in 2010, I also put my name forward for the board of directors for the Human Resources Association of Calgary. And I wasn't successful. But I asked them for some feedback. And I got feedback that I needed to mature as a professional, and I also needed to get some board experience. And they gave me some really clear feedback in where I needed to grow and develop. And so I sought out that development because I wanted to join that board and challenge myself to get on it one day. I went and I joined a community board of directors in the first year as a board member. And then I had the opportunity to take on the board chair role the following year, in my second year. And I also set out to round out my professional development in the ways that I was advised. And 2 years later, I put my name forward for the Human Resources Association of Calgary again, and I was elected to their board of directors in 2012. I continued to serve in the HR community after 2012 by serving on other boards and, or other committees and events and other ways to serve our community and to continue to grow my business acumen and my understanding of the profession. And that led me to the opportunity to be elected to the CPHR Alberta Board of Directors in 2015, for which I served a 3-year term. That development in being engaged in those boards and on those committees then gave me the opportunity to become elected to the Calgary Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors in 2017. Since then, I've also had the privilege of serving on, as you heard, the Dean's Advisory Committee for the Bessette School of Business and School of Communication Studies right here at Mount Royal University. It's also given me the opportunity to serve on numerous advisory boards and committees serving in community and our business community in Calgary. It puts me in front of some of the best leaders in our city so that I can learn from them. It's not just about volunteering and contributing. I feel like I win the learning lottery every time I get one of these opportunities. Since then, I've also had the opportunity to join the board for the Calgary Youth Justice Society that has a leadership program for struggling and at-risk youth. And a lot of people think I do it because of what I do for my profession. That's not it. It's I wish I had a program like theirs when I was a young person. And if I wish I had it, then it's my responsibility to ensure that it's there for our youth today. I also serve our community on the board for the Grand Theatre Society as their vice chair and for the Calgary Parks Foundation, two boards that I joined in 2019. And it's because of this work in community that I've achieved business success from that learning, but it's also what's led to some of my recognition. In 2019, a prof from the university, Dr. Melanie Peacock, is someone that I stayed in touch with throughout my human resources career, and she nominated me for an alumni award right here at Mount Royal. And when I went to the nominee reception to meet the other nominees and enjoy just being nominated for the award, I went home that night having met some amazing people, and I told my husband, I am a solid fifth for this award, because you should meet the amazing people I had the privilege of meeting tonight. it was just a privilege to be nominated. And then just a few weeks later, I got a phone call from David Daugherty, president of the university, and I thought he was calling to congratulate me on being nominated. And then he told me that I was being recognized with the Alumni Award. I know that this was not because of just my professional business achievements. It was largely due to my community involvement. And while I can't control or count on business success, I am fully in control of how I show up as a leader in our community. As a result of showing up year after year after year as a leader in our community, I was recognized last fall as one of Canada's top 100 most powerful women in an award ceremony with 1,800 people at that event in Toronto. Something that I never ever thought I could aspire to do as a young person. My story isn't any easier or any harder than yours. My story isn't any more inspirational than yours. I want you to embrace your hard. I want you to embrace the choices that are in front of you. I know you don't know where all of them are going to lead. I never knew where my choices were going to lead me. I want you to leave bad situations, and I want you to lead into opportunity that you don't know where it's going to go, and take that leap of faith. And I want you to risk getting it wrong so that you have a chance of opportunity. And don't fool yourself that gender won't be an issue for you. It will. And I know you'll find your way. And I want you to build your leadership on the fringes of your career. Now, ultimately, I want your 15-year-old self to know that you have unlimited potential. You're never a victim of your circumstances, no matter what happens to you. And ultimately, it's what you choose to do in your hardest moments in life that are going to decide what's possible for you. Thank you.